At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Yeah, there it is. When that robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELC.
Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you've been enjoying the holiday here in the United States. Maybe you've had explosions ringing in your ears and you'd like something a little more gentle. Well, we're going to be there in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free, thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Those fine folks bring this show to you. Their generosity, their support means we get to keep making them. And boy, are we grateful. In exchange, they get some cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a whole bevy of bonus content, including the return of Feeling This Fridays. Oh my goodness, season 3 of Feeling This has just debuted, and Feeling This Fridays are going to continue every Friday until the end of season 3. That means you get to hear Alex Solman and Christian Spicer talk about the feelings behind video games in their show. It's so much fun, so interesting, and it's exclusive to patrons. But that's not the only bonus content we offer for patrons. No, no. You can also get spoiler chats, other bonus content, and the Wednesday paid DLC program, where Lana Bashinsky joins Christian Spicer and myself talking about all kinds of nonsense. It's a crazy, wacky, fun time every Wednesday for patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games in the many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, the spell of two N's and one T. And I am joined by our returning champion, Mr. Christian Spicer, back after a week off. Yeah, he's just a ship passing in the night. Hello, Christian Spicer. How are you?
Hello.
Is that how a ship would sound? Sad I missed last main show. It was a fun one, and happy to be back. This first episode of Feeling This, as you mentioned, Jeff, that came out on Friday, is about stealth, and Alex Solman and I breaking down kind of what makes stealth in games feel so good and why it really clicks when it clicks. It's an awesome episode, audio version and video version on demand, right there for all levels of patrons to sneak in and check it out.
So much fun. I hope people do check it out. But we got a big show for you right now. We got some games to talk about, Capcom showing out what's next for them, all kinds of other interesting news, and games that we have been playing. And ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, we have an awesome guest for you. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian, but this week, I'm so excited because once again, DLC stands for Discussions with Lucas from Canada, because we have one of the best to ever do it, our friend from Electric Playground, and EPTV nowadays, Mr. Victor Lucas is back with us. Hey, Vic, how are you?
I'm great, man. I love the intro. It gets me pumped. You guys are incredible at this. I'm loving this Feeling It Fridays idea. I think that's so cool, this idea of attaching the emotional spectrum to how we interact with video games and what they mean to us and what we're feeling while we're playing it. That's how I pitched the show, guys. That's how I started back in the mid-90s. It was like, this isn't just little dots on the screen. You're having an emotional reaction to this. This is what people are talking about, and they're psyched about it, and we should talk with the people that make these things and let people know how this stuff comes together and why it comes together. And a bunch of broadcasters heard that and said, okay, let's do it.
Yeah, you know, Vic, you paved the way. And the coolest news about all of this is that folks can revisit all of that amazing content that you made in the mid-90s and all the way through today, right? You're rebroadcasting it. You're repackaging it. Tell us about EPTV and what you're doing right now.
It's kind of incredible. It's a surreal thing because this was a lot of work by a lot of really talented people back when we started in 97 was the first season of the show. I did a deal with the University of Toronto, Mississauga, and what they did is they acquired this massive video game collection from a gentleman named Sid Bolton, who passed away, sadly. Wonderful guy, a friend of mine. But he had acquired this massive collection of games and computers and all kinds of technology to play these games on because they are developing a game studies program, not necessarily game making program, but for academics to kind of dissect the information. And so we got connected through Scott Jones, who is an amazing friend of mine, was on the show, you know, Scott.
Yeah.
And he connected us because he was working with Sid's widow to help find a home for his collection. And we started talking about the video assets that could fit alongside of that for their students' use. And I said, okay, let's do a deal. And we ended up packaging 100 moving boxes of all of our physical media, wow, which took forever. It was a huge job. It was a surreal job to hold every one of these tapes in there and put them in the boxes and ship them away. But they're digitizing everything in 4K for their own archival usage. And they have all of our physical media, which will be stored safely. They'll be sharing that stuff privately with their students. And then, of course, they're sending me the digital assets so that I can share them with everybody. And that's what I've been doing. So every weekend, I didn't want to just throw everything up all at once. I wanted to kind of celebrate every show like we used to, except there won't be replays. It'll just go from week to week. And guys, we did about 4,000 episodes of our television shows. So this is going to be, that's why it was such a big project and I needed to find partners. So they came aboard and we have a classic gaming retailer partner named PMP Games who sells new stuff as well, but they also sell a lot of retro stuff. So it's a perfect fit and they totally have a blast with the advertising that they sprinkled into the show. They're wonderful people. And so every weekend we premiere a new classic episode and we've done all of season one from 1997 and we've just started season two from 1998. And I hop on the chat and I invite people to pop in every once in a while. And the other cool thing is I've been interviewing people from that time period today. And so one of the most recent ones, and I have a longer kind of podcast conversation, I interviewed Mark DeLora, who's in the current episode that we just premiered, showing me the Game Boy camera and the Game Boy Color. And, you know, he worked at Nintendo back then. He ended up launching N64 and GameCube and then working at PlayStation to launch the PlayStation 2. And then he ended up at the White House, you know. Wow. So he's a guy that actually worked with Barack Obama and Joe Biden as a conduit to the video game industry with all of this experience and all of these relationships. Huh. And just a fascinating conversation. So I keep having these conversations. David Doak from Rare, you know, we featured GoldenEye in our first season and talked to Ken Lobb about it. It's been surreal, guys. And so every week I'm reminded of the stuff that we all did together, this incredibly talented group of people that I was privileged to work with. And it's also created a lot of really interesting new conversations about stuff, which has been awesome. It's been really cool. I feel like we proved that you could make this content and make it available for anybody. You didn't have to know everything. And I think so much of game coverage now is so granular and so inside baseball and so exclusive. It's like you have to join a club to come in and feel like you know what the hell's going on. And EP was never about that, you know? So it's been kind of cool to revisit it and show it off and share it. And man, I'm freaking grateful. Like I always am. I'm still doing this. I still love what I get to do. I'm of course reviewing new things and I'm going to be going down to D23 pretty soon to cover all of the stuff that Disney's got on, in the works for the next several years. So, and I went to SGF and had an amazing time at Summer Game Fest. It's crazy to be doing what you started doing 30 years ago and you're still doing it, you know,
and
it's crazy.
Still doing it well, man. I love seeing it, and you're such a great positive force in the industry. And, I obviously love having you on the show. Before we get into the meat of things, I'm curious what your personal experience is revisiting content you made in 97. Like what is that experience like for you?
Well, I'm proud of this disparate group of people, and some I knew before making the show and some I just met along the way. I'm proud of that we figured out how to do it, and it has a good vibe right from the very beginning. The one thing that I did back then, which I think was very prescient, because I'd never produced any television before, you know, that was the thing. It was the hurdle of not just making a show about this space, but I'd never made a TV show before. And none of the people that I was working with had really done this in a committed way. Like people had popped on the news and other kinds of things. But I wrote down a whole script for all 13 episodes of the first season, like with dialogue that the interviewers were going to give us. And a lot of it was, you know, presupposed on who we would have access to and everything. But I handed out the scripts to everybody, and the work on doing it helped me visualize it and helped me kind of understand what the show was going to be. But it also, I think, was I was able to present it to everybody that was working on the show. And there was this idea of, oh, okay, I see this is how it's all going to come together. And of course, a lot of it was very different from that. But we, for a bunch of, you know, there were some experienced people in there, but there was a lot of like first timers doing this. I'm pretty damn proud. I wish we wore different outfits. I wish I had maybe a stylist or something, you know, but like back then the cameras were so bloody expensive and so heavy. And so that really pushed you to have some idea of what the lighting was going to be, because everything had a cost associated with it. Right. And so we have some good looking footage from back then. A lot of stuff that isn't good looking, a lot of stuff that isn't properly white balanced and some weird Dutch angles and stuff like that, because it was the 90s. Sure. But there is a lot of stuff that we actually labored over to kind of get some quality together, and it holds up, you know. And I'll tell you what it's also really, you know, underlines for me is that the people are more interesting than the products. And that is always the truth. And because we left the studio and we weren't just a bunch of experts telling everybody that they should play this or, you know, this is how you should feel about something, we let the people that make this stuff tell us, it stands the test of time, you know? So it's not only just this interesting moment in time, but it's this kind of constant threaded conversation about creativity and ambition and hopefulness, you know, because these people, none of them knew, like none of us, nobody making the show, nobody that was making these games, nobody knew what was going to happen. And we covered tons of games that didn't get made. And, you know, they were halfway through the development and they just didn't happen. But you can see the glint in everybody's eyes.
And video games were a niche back then. They were, they were headed toward the mainstream, but they certainly weren't in it quite yet. It's an amazing thing, and it's so cool that people right now can check that stuff out. So it's awesome that you're able to represent it to the internet generation, you know?
Yeah, it's very wild. And you're a part of that story too, Jeff. I mean, it's going to take us some years of putting all of this content up.
Wait long enough, I'll show up eventually.
and the other thing, we're going to put all the shows up, all the reviews, episodes and everything, but we're also going to put the A-roll up. All the raw footage is going to go up eventually. And so there'll be new ways to disseminate that, new channels. And I'm thinking of doing marathons on Twitch and stuff and just kind of hitting the play button and maybe popping in every once in a while and just letting people just sort of watch it like they're watching it on a network or something. There's a lot that we can do with all this stuff. There's so much stuff. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I'm honored to be a tiny part of it, and it's so cool that you're still going. So let's jump in and talk about the stuff that we're doing now. We're playing now. By starting the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the week, it's the story of the week. Story of the week, it's the story of the week.
Story Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send comments, questions, suggestions, anything you'd like us to know. We love hearing from you. dlcfeedback@gmail.com is the best way. You can also reach out and talk to other folks that listen to the show on our Discord, which is 5x5DLC on Discord. Lots of great folks hanging out in the chat there, talking all sorts of topics. But Vic, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I think the Capcom reveals warrant being the first out of the gate for sure. There's some huge stuff there. I think the big one, of course, is the Dead Rising remake. You know, Capcom has become the kings and queens of remakes over the last little while. Just amazing rediscoveries of incredible content, but kind of recrafted and retooled for modern players. And Dead Rising is such an incredible idea, so much fun. You know, obviously the more comical antithesis to this heavy, serious, and gore-filled Resident Evil franchise. But that was a fantastic game. And Frank West was such a cool character and setting everything up in the mall. And the satire around capitalism and the crazy characters that we get to take out and all kinds of fun creative ways. I think that's going to be amazing. And all the Resident Evil news is very cool as well. I think that was a great showcase.
Well, let's dig into it. As you mentioned, I think there were only three games that they really focused on this Capcom Next event that happened last week, or this week, I should say. And I think the Dead Rising Deluxe Remaster, as they're calling it, DRDR, which is slated to be released on September 19th, we heard rumblings about that last week, which we kind of mentioned in the show, but this was the full unveiling of what they're doing as a deluxe remaster. And they were very keen to not call it a remake, but indicate that it is much more than simply a up-res or, you know, a traditional remaster. There is a lot of graphical work that has been done, new textures, new models for a lot of the characters. The game looks very modern, but also, you know, some quality of life improvements. You can move while aiming, which, you know, folks now take for granted. But back, you know, 18 years ago when this game came out, hey, sometimes you didn't get to both
a little
walk
clunky
and aim.
Yeah.
I think this kind of came out of left field a bit, a Dead Rising remaster. Certainly a franchise that Capcom hasn't mentioned in a while. Vic, do you think this indicates maybe more interest in this franchise, or is this a testing of the waters, do you think?
Well, there was a Dead Rising game that was in development, and there was mocap already captured for it. There was some interesting stuff in the works, and then I know a little bit about it, so I don't know what I'm supposed to say here, but it didn't happen for whatever reason. That was sad. And there were some huge changes with the studio that was working on it. It's probably all out there, but I just don't want to get anybody in trouble or whatever. But work was done and stories were developed and a big kind of thing was going to happen. And then it didn't happen. And I think what's happened is that Resident Evil has just been on fire since 2 came out, and 3 was great. Although I know a lot of people thought it was too short or whatever. I love that game. 4 was phenomenal. 7 was just mind-blowing, and I know that one of the things is that 7's coming to Apple hardware, which is great. Village was incredible as well, and now there's tease of what they're going to do with 9. And it's such a juggernaut that they're thinking, okay, let's diversify. This is what you do when you're successful, is you try to put more balloons up in the air. And the Dead Rising franchise has been incredibly successful for Capcom, and I think the appetite hasn't waned. And just that association of Capcom and zombies, I mean, that's been so successful, but there's also this new level and new wave of players out there, like a new generation, because these games are selling bigger than they ever have in their history, the new Resident Evil titles. So it makes perfect sense to me that in the same way they had some success with Dead Rising, correlating with their, you know, initial successes with Resident Evil, they're going to do that again, and they're going to expect some exponential growth. I think it makes sense that they're not going full remake on Dead Rising. They're kind of dipping their toe in to see how people sort of take to this. But the buzz is amazing. If it does very well, then yeah, I think we're going to start to see new content in Dead Rising. And I think it's going to be up to Capcom to really differentiate the play mechanics, because there is going to be this, there's a lot more, you know, customizing your creations in Dead Rising and putting your stuff together than you get in Resident Evil. But Resident Evil now is so much more action packed and, you know, filled with this immediacy that it what didn't have initially, that I could kind of see them crossing the streams a little bit. And who knows, they might have that as part of the plan, you know. Who knows, they might actually start to thread some of this narrative together, which would be kind of crazy.
Christian, you weren't here last week when we kind of talked about the possibility of this. I don't recall what your relationship is with the first Dead Rising game, but interesting, I think, as part of the announcement, they were quick to point out that they did not update any of the animations. They wanted to retain the game's sort of goofiness, its over-the-top things. If Frank gets knocked, he goes spinning and does loop-de-loops, and it does not look like a modern physics-enhanced game, and that's part of the intent. They wanted to retain that. Do you think this game will still appeal to modern gamers who maybe won't even be familiar with the franchise?
I think it will, and I think it has a chance to in a big way. Asterix being September seems like a very crowded month, so I'm curious how it kind of stands out then. But to me, this is Dead Rising. You know, it's an MD, PhD. This is Doctor Dead Rising. They went back, got their second doctorate. And I think that silly type stuff could play really strongly in terms of people capturing it on TikTok. You know, all the silly things that you can do in the Dead Rising games were shared, air quote, virally amongst dorm rooms and friends. And now that can be shared easily, virally, in a wide audience. I mean, there are so many silly things in the Dead Rising games, and they wear that silliness really on its sleeve and lean into it. And so I think there's a big market for that. So much of the zombification of the world right now is still pretty serious. You know, we've stepped out into silly before, Shaun of the Dead, and there's been a lot of it that's happened already. But right now, maybe aside from Arizona Sunshine and VR, a lot of the zombie games that are doing well, I know that Resident Evil is silly on its own as well, but not in the way Dead Rising is. So no. I really think there's room for this kind of slapstick, humor filled, not taking itself too seriously. I'm really curious about, Jeff, and they mention it some, but how much of the quality of life improvements other than walking and aiming come to this game? Because I feel like that's been something that the fans have been asking for this franchise. I think 3 was an Xbox 360 exclusive, and they touted that stuff back then, but it kind of got a little too self-serious. So I'm curious if they can deliver on that front.
Well, autosaves, they specifically pointed out autosaves, which to me is the biggest thing that you would want for a modern version of Dead Rising, because that game could be pretty frustrating if you died in a certain way. Somebody recently, it may have been on this show, and I can't recall who said it, wasn't me, called Dead Rising the first roguelite, you know? And in
right,
a lot
because
of ways,
there was a loop on it, right?
Yes,
yeah, the time was ticking down. Yeah,
yeah, you
they,
had to
they
do it.
They went away from all that. They made it way too simple and action-oriented with 4, mm-hmm. and that was the backlash with 4. Yeah. And some of this clunky.
Exactly. I agree with that. It took away some of its character and its identity by doing that.
Yeah.
But having said that, the saving situation was very frustrating in that game, because you could have hours of stuff that you did just get wiped out if you didn't get to a place in time or you died prematurely. So the fact that now it's adding in auto saves and stuff like that, I think that's going to do wonders to make the game much more playable and fun and accessible. So in that sense, I think, you know, that's at least one other quality of life thing that perked my ears up during the Capcom Next presentation, because it's like, oh, yes, I remember being so frustrated by that in the first Dead Rising. But it's a game I really loved back 18 years ago, you know, when it was released.
Oh, has it been that long, Jeff?
Dude,
you had to say that?
It's not pleasant.
No.
It's not a pleasant.
18 years.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I know. In the blink of an eye.
Jesus.
But and I do think, man, it looks great. Like they took a lot of TLC on this one. It really feels like a labor of love and care that making the environments look good, adding lighting and shadows, and really updating a lot of the geometry for things. I mean, it is a dramatic improvement. I loved how they did a lot of those side by side comparisons of the original to what they've done here. This is not just higher resolution, higher frame rate, although you are also getting those things. They've done a lot more work than that, and I think I'm pretty excited about it.
I freaking love Capcom. I love that company. They are not afraid to have weird experiments. You know, they've just been committed to lots of awesome games. They've had a lot of incredible staff decide they want to split out and start new companies and stuff. But then they bring in new waves of generations of insanely creative idea. Makers that build us beautiful new experiences. And we just have been the benefactors of lots of really, really cool games. And they're so invested in that, they don't have pachinko machines. They're not selling televisions. They're not doing a whole bunch of other things. Of course, there's all the toy deals and the licensing and everything, but they're so focused on just entertaining us with their games. And they've been killing it. They've been killing it.
Well, count down to the Dino Crisis remaster that I've been sending letters to get, but we'll see. Well, we'll see if that happens. How far down the list they get on these remakes?
I just read that they're closing. Capcom's has Exo Primal, right? They're closing that one down.
Which very much felt very Dino Crisis-y, but yes, clearly did not do well. Less than a year after that game launched, it's being shuttered. Yeah. It was going to be
It's actually going to be live. But they're not putting new content, and you can play it with bots, but for how long? I hate that these games just disappear.
That's a bummer.
You should just be able to download it. If you really love it, you should just be able to download it and just keep it, and just play it with bots if you want to. Maybe Capcom will do that. But I did play this Path of the Goddess game. I played that at Summer Game Fest. I actually got hands on with that, and it's gorgeous, and it's very weird. It's a fusion of the hack and slash style, like an Okami type experience, with all of these little demons that are busting through the door. But it's also a strategy experience. You're actually going over and you're possessing different characters and you're trying to line them in the path of the demons that are coming in. And so there's a tower defense kind of vibe to this action sort of escape that you have. And visuals are beautiful, and it's also the camera's pulled back quite a bit, so you have a nice vista on all of the details and stuff. I think it's going to be, it's not like their highest profile release, of the last several years, but I think it's going to be very special and very unique and a nice little summer surprise that we're going to get this year.
Good point. It's coming out, I think, 10 days from when this episode is released, so very soon. There is a demo available for people to try it out, and it does seem like this interesting mashup of two disparate styles. Christian, what did you make of Kunitsu Gami, Path of the Goddess, from the next presentation?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's an Exoprimal or if it's the next Resident Evil, right? And I love that Capcom does this. For all I know, it will kind of launch kind of underwhelming for a lot of folks. And then, 15 years later, we'll get Dragon's Dogma 2. You know, Capcom, they have, what is it, even in the Raiders of the Lost Ark, right? You see the warehouse where all the artifacts are kept. Like that was shot on location where Capcom holds their hits. You know, they have so many hits, generation after generation, and some of them come out and maybe underperform, but they get this cult status behind them, Dino Crisis being one of them. And Capcom revisits them and I think looks to reinvent them in a really interesting way. And I love that there's a game like Path of the Goddess that exists that is them taking a chance, and it's not backyard fighter out of the streets in your back, they're doing new, dare I say, weird and quirky things still alongside these marquee titles. And I think Path of the Goddess has a chance to be one of those in the future if the combat lands. I didn't play the demo, I haven't gone hands on, so I think it depends on how it feels in the hand over a couple hours, but it looks beautiful.
Yeah, visually, it's really striking. I mean, the art direction is really interesting. It's obviously Japanese-inspired, but it's got this kind of very odd mythology and fantastical elements that are infused in it as well. All your sword slashes kind of have weird tracer things happening. It's really an interesting look that I think may differentiate it enough that gets people's attention. We'll see. Coming out very soon. So we'll check it out. And then the third game, as Vic mentioned, was Resident Evil 7 Biohazard coming out on iOS devices and Mac, which, you know, I think is pretty cool, pretty interesting, especially a game that is that visually impressive that they're managing to get it out on mobile. Pretty cool stuff. I thought overall, you know, not the deepest bench of games to show off at a direct type event, but I liked the depth and I liked the detail that we were given on all of these. So pretty cool. All right, let's take a quick break for a sponsor and we'll be back with more right after this. This episode of DLC is brought to you by BetterHelp. You know, one of the things that is so insidious about social media, Christian Spicer, is the way it makes you start to compare yourself to other people, right? Everybody's having a better time than me. Everybody's happy except me, right?
Everybody's showing honest to goodness pictures of them in the moment, and that represents every moment of their life where they're always happy and no one is ever sad like I'm feeling right now.
Christian is on vacation and I'm not.
I did not post that.
You get sort of caught up in wishing your life looked like somebody else's. And one of the things they say is comparison is the thief of joy, right? That you sort of steal away your own joy by measuring it against something else. And when you envy other people's lives, you sort of lose sight of your own happiness, your own joy. It looks like everybody's got it together. Everybody's doing what you're not. Therapy can help you focus on what you want instead of what others have, so you can start living your best life. Christian, I know we've talked a bunch of times about how we've both benefited from therapy and really think it is a useful thing in our own lives.
I have said it before, and I'll say it time and time again. I'm a big fan, and I think it's something that is helpful even when you don't think you need it.
Yeah.
It is an aid that is available to you, and I think the more people should take advantage of it, because we take advantage of so many other aids in our life, or whether it's a tutor when you're back in school or something else that can help you refocus or get a leg up or do something. But then when it's time for us to do that for ourselves, I think, unfortunately, not enough people take that time, and I wish more people would.
Well, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Stop comparing and start focusing with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DLC today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DLC. All right, Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
The adaptation verse continues. And so everybody is wondering where Beyond Good and Evil 2 is. You know, Ubisoft is another publisher that has these franchises that people want more of. Splinter Cell, whatever you want to pick. Watch Dogs is another hit franchise they had for years. And a movie adaptation was announced all those years ago also. And now it turns out that movie is actually being made. And we learned they were just waiting for their actors to get old enough to be in it. Because when they picked them, they were 4 and 8, I think, is how old the actors are. They're older than that. But we got the old clickety-clack board, the slate, saying they're making it. It's happening. Details seem pretty scarce still in terms of, you know, is this an adaptation of 1, 2, or 3, or kind of an original story in this world? But for folks that have played the Watchdog games, the idea of, you know, you're this counter-government hacker organization taking on the biggest threats in the world in ways where you need to sneak into top-secret facilities, take down these non-government organization tech companies gone wild, blending in with scenery as you come and go. I mean, you could just put Tom Cruise in it and call it Mission Impossible 20, and it fits right. The bill, right? So I'm excited for this, and I hope that this is better than Assassin's Creed, another franchise that you could see a great movie, or Prince of Persia, another franchise where you could see there being a good movie.
Yeah, Ubisoft has not had the best luck. Vic, we've lived through bad video game movies when a video game movie kind of meant it was going to be bad. And now we are in this place where the opposite is true. And we're getting really excellent things like the Fallout TV show and the Last of Us TV show. What is your feeling about Watch Dogs as a IP for the movies?
The games kind of started to fizzle a bit. I think that the games had a great moment and some great mechanics and some great ideas. I think one of the things that they suffered from is there were too many in quick succession. And one of the things that the industry needs to learn from Nintendo is we need to miss these things. And then they need to come back in a big way. And Ubi has had trouble doing that. And, I think public companies just do. I think they have major success and then they just double and triple down on some of these titles, just keep coming out with them.
I mean, look at this podcast. We do it every week. Like Jeff and I had
there's more than
11
enough
years ago.
There's more than enough things for us to talk about out there, but I feel like, I've enjoyed the creativity on them. And I actually like the Watch Dogs, the London-based one. I forget what the subtitle was, but I thought it was pretty cool. And I like the San Francisco one. So when I hear that a movie is in the works, I'm like, oh, okay. Like Mr. Robot also had its moment, and that was an amazing series. And I forget the creator of that show made that pretty cool Netflix movie with Ethan Hawke, where all the hack happened and turned the world into turmoil. It's terrifying. And so there is this media out there that has kind of come and the moment has passed. But as Christian started to explain it to me, I think the idea of this being a series where it's a like a television series, I don't know what the plans are, if it's just going to be a film or whatever, but I could see there being a mission structure to a cast of these renegades doing these different A-team-like hacking missions in different parts of the world on a weekly basis or whatever for 10 weeks or something. I think that could be cool. Yeah. And like sort of making it a plurality, like there's more than just one Aiden. What's his name? Aiden. I forget the guy's name.
Yeah. The no main one guy. Ever knew Aiden, the protagonist's name.
Aiden Pierce.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's just not the interesting thing. What became interesting with Watch Dogs is that they did assemble this different cast of characters, and they each had their own skill sets. And then, of course, you were hacking into other human beings and sort of controlling them and the portable tech that they were carrying around with them. There's some cool ideas in there for sure, but I feel like they should be not just have one mission in one movie and they're trying to take down, like, we don't need the origin story of these guys, the origin story is everywhere around us. It's, like all of us are technologists at this point. We're all walking around with way more tech than we need in our lives, The idea should be, how do you utilize all these skills in a way that's making the world better, and combating the techno? I mean, at this point, it would be like, how do we hack into Facebook and make sure they're not stealing our data and sharing it with nefarious people just before an election?
Well,
like
$10 says that this movie is about the young kids taking down an AI. That's my prediction, is that it's going to be about the government has allowed AI to control the city on some level, and the young kids need to
You've just described War Games from 1983.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think this could be a really cool movie. I think it is going to be a movie, not a show. But I do think this could – it's got the scaffolding that you can hang a cool story.
Yeah.
Will it is an open question. How good will it come out? But I do think the premise is strong enough to support a movie. And it's crazy to me that they literally announced the movie – that there was going to be a movie before the game was released back in 2013. And here we are, a decade later, and it's actually it's filming. So who knows when it's going to come out, maybe another year or so. But I think this has as good a shot as any other video game movie to be a decent film. We'll see.
The cool thing is that it's set in Chicago, San Francisco, and London, but they're filming all three cities just in Vancouver. So it's really going to feel...
Which is good, which is where The Last of Us is right now. The thing that's crazy about The Last of Us that I think is really interesting is that they're producing at a pretty interesting pace. And I know that the second game is going to be more than just one season, but we it's a hit. They're both hits. And so the game could inform the show or vice versa at some point. Yeah. There could be this moment where the plot just starts and Neil's involved with both, and Naughty Dog's involved with both, which is fantastic. And I'm always a little skeptical when the property that it's based on is kind of waned, it's kind of gone.
Yeah,
because there's a Sleeping Dogs movie or something that's supposed to be on the way.
All the dogs.
And
Square Must Love just, Dogs was a big hit, 15 years.
But Square just let that go, that was an incredible game, and it would be amazing to see that revitalized.
Yeah, you don't want to have a Game of Thrones situation where the source material is outpaced by the adaptation, and then it's like, now we're just making it up. Here we go.
Yeah. Let's hope that George R.R. comes close to what we came up with.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm actually very curious what Druckmann and team is going to do with the show, and if it's going to, get past what we know, and then it's going to lead off into interesting new things with the game. I mean, that would be wild.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's, as you said, it's filming right now in Vancouver. So not too much longer. We have to wait for season two. Very excited about that.
Yeah.
All right. I wouldn't have to take too much time on my story of the week, but I did want to point out, as I always like to do, I love Summer Games Done Quick, wonderful fundraising charity situation, and just a incredible showcase for what people are able to do with video games. Two video games. This Summer Games Done Quick, which just wrapped up, had a pretty fun moment that I wanted to highlight in case anybody listening wasn't paying attention. I think you'll enjoy, it's worthwhile looking up the video of one particular moment, which will be my story of the week. There was a moment where they were playing Ken Griffey Jr. Presents Major League Baseball. This was actually happening on the 4th of July, and it was being played by Peanut Butter. Now, Peanut Butter is not your average video gamer. Peanut Butter is a little doggy, a little adorable little doggy. Peanut Butter and Peanut Butter's owner, JSR, they were playing. JSR has trained Peanut Butter to press the button at a certain moment when he gives a signal. And there's this amazing moment where the baseball game of Ken Griffey Jr. Presents Major League Baseball goes into extra innings. Peanut Butter manages to get a man on base, and then it's an extra innings. It's the potential to win the game with all they have to do is score a run, and they win the game. And Peanut Butter hits a home run, and the crowd just goes bananas. And it's very heartwarming and delightful to see a dog. There's nothing in the rules that says a dog can't play video games, anyway, that's my story of the week. Vic, I assume you also a delight in the Summer Games Done Quick antics, just seeing do stuff to video games like that is wild.
I hear the stories, and but I honestly hardly ever have time to cover that as something that I do, but I definitely hear the stories. It blows me away what people can accomplish in games, and get through things so quickly and play things with their feet and play stuff with musical instruments and just crush everything. It just blows me away.
There's a guy this year that did a full 10-minute speed run of, I believe it's Super Mario 64.
Yeah.
Blindfolded.
That's wild.
10-minute speed run. All you have is audio input to know where you are, what you're doing, and does this full speed run beating the game. Like, that's just
amazing.
Wild. Yeah.
That is amazing. Yeah, I'm not doing the rundown right now, which is like my daily news hit that I used to do all the time. And only because then I don't have the time to play the games and talk about the games. And it's just when you're small, you have a bunch of different choices that you have to make with your time. Sure. But that's what I would talk about. If I was doing stuff like this, I would definitely be hitting this kind of thing. And what's different now with video games than when we were full bore with the television stuff is that there's just so many cool communities around it. And there's so much celebration and so much vocalization of people's adoration for this medium. And it is like this other sector of coverage. And I look at the news on a lot of sites, and so much of the news that's around video games is about people uncovering something, some kind of secret that they've just discovered in Elden Ring or something like that. And it's like a shared post. And I just wonder if everybody's just going to Reddit and to all these forums to kind of pick up the chatter and then bring that out, and it becomes news, which I think is cool because these things launch and then they become part of the culture. You know, they become part of the way that we have discourse around it. And I think it's amazing.
That, and a dog is better at video games than I am. Yeah. So, you know, there's two sides.
Was that the Super Nintendo Ken Griffey game?
I think it was, yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so fun.
That's awesome.
All right, let's take another quick break for a sponsor, and we'll be right back after this.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
All right. It's time to get into the games that we have been playing in a segment we call The Playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on The Playlist. Vic, I know, as always, you are playing a lot of stuff. Where would you like to start?
I've been playing a lot on handheld machines. I play a lot of Switch, and I've been recently playing a lot. I play everything, but... Luigi's Mansion 2 HD has been taking up a lot of my time. It's been great to revisit that. I loved Dark Moon when it was on the 3DS. And Next Level has gone in and they've cleaned everything up for a bigger screen. It's not quite as beautiful as Luigi's Mansion 3 is, which I think is one of the best games to play on the Switch. But as we saw with the Nintendo Switch Direct that was out a little while ago, this is a system that is just delivering right up to the very end, right? and probably for years to come, you know, there's some really solid software out there. And Mansion 2 should be played. And I know that a lot of people, because the 3DS was no slouch in terms of install base, and it was a very successful game. And so I think the question is, do you love this franchise enough that you want to play it again? All I can say is I've been having a really, really good time. But I do say with this one, as opposed to 3, it feels a little bit more like you have a little, it's like a snack game. You don't sit there and play it for hours because there's a repetition of going back into the environments and discovering a little bit more each time that you do. But it's really fun, man. Like, it basically, Luigi's a Ghostbuster. It's the coolest.
Yeah.
I really dig that. And then I've been playing Super Monkey Ball Banana Rumble, which is terrific and just loaded with tons of single player content and lots of weird, quirky multiplayer mini games and all kinds of Sega. I love when Sega does this. Sega is, again, one of these magic companies that has just this Raiders of the Lost Ark collection of incredible IP and all of these characters that we love. And so they're throwing it, like they have a Crazy Taxi character in one of the Monkey Balls, you know, which is just awesome. And
that a remake of
no, it's
of
brand new.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's brand new. They use the Unity engine though. And I've seen, because it's a Switch game, it's a Switch exclusive at this point. And so there are some frame rate hiccups. Runs pretty good in single player. It slows down quite a bit in multiplayer, but it doesn't really diminish the fun of it. It's just, it's too bad that it's not silky smooth all the way. You know, mm-hmm. I would love to see this on Switch 2 or more powerful hardware and just see, you know, as this run as clean as it possibly could. But it's a great release. It's a vaunted franchise, you know, like I know it's silly and it's goofy, but it's been very, very successful. One of my favorite Monkey Ball memories is playing the original iPhone version of the game and having that moment of like real appreciation for what iOS gameplay could mean for portable gaming, you know, and that had the accelerometer so you could sort of turn the iPhone screen around, you know, you'd be flipping and tilting. It was great. And of course you can do that with the Switch, fun. And I've been playing Rocket Knight Resparked from Limited Run Games, which is a collection of the Rocket Knight and then Sparks the Knight or something for the Super Nintendo. I've only got Rocket Knight as a Genesis cartridge, but these were old 16-bit games that Konami made. And truly, like, up there in terms of visual fidelity and artistic ambition with Sonic the Hedgehog. Not quite Mario, I don't think, but it was, like, totally cool mascot characters, except for the fact that they're brutally difficult. Like, it's just impossible to time out when all the projectiles are coming out and stuff. And you've got a little jetpack on you, this little rocket pack on you, and you've got attacks in a whole bunch of different flavors. But there is a rewind function on this, and I've been using it a lot trying to get past these levels. But it's gorgeous. It looks great. And Limited Run did something cool where they threw in all kinds of concept work and box art and stuff like that. So it's actually a great little package. And the other game I've been playing a little bit on the Steam Deck and the ROG Ally and PC, I can't really talk about it too much, but it's called Signy All Guns Blazing, which is coming from Konami, and it's a space shooter. It's a 3D gorgeous space shooter from a company called Keelworks out of Edinburgh, Scotland. And they went all out to like rethink of what how cinematic a space shooter can be. You know, like
it's like a bullet hell, radius. Full bullet hell, right?
It is, but yeah. You can absorb a lot of the hits, and you can balance between your shields and your guns and all that stuff. But it's
looks
just so cinematic.
This game,
it really does, and it makes you wonder why people don't go for it with this genre. It was so proliferate; we had so many of them. Like the movie Westerns, and then the tap just got turned off. And then it's just like a sporadic thing. And people try to, you know, come out with something new, or they re-release something from back in the day, or they make a pixel game that will run on a Sega Genesis or something. But it's a wicked genre, like an amazing genre. It's fun to play these games. And so I can't really get into how I feel about this one, but I just would say to the game industry at large, why do we forget awesome game genres? Why do we just let them dry up?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Now, again, it's called Signy All Guns Blazing, and I think it's slated for an August release, right?
Yeah.
So it's a little early, but man, I've had my eye on this one just because I do love those old, you know, R-Type and those old bullet hell games. And this looks like, what if that, but leveraging modern graphics? And it is... It's a spectacle. I mean, at least judging, I haven't gotten any hands on with it, but just at least judging by its Steam page, looks really, really cool.
Yeah, so, I played it last year actually at an event, and it was where they had the Metal Gear Solid stuff, and it was amazing. It was really, really lovely. So to catch up with it again, I think people are going to be talking about it. Let's just say that.
Awesome. So that's Signy All Guns Blazing, Rocket Knight Resparked Collection. Super Monkey Ball, Banana, Rumble.
Rumble, yeah.
And Luigi's Mansion 2, which are all on Victor Lucas's playlist.
That's what I've been keeping busy with, yeah.
Love it. Very, very cool stuff. Christian Spicer, what about you? What's on your playlist?
This is Christian's free-to-play corner, apparently, as I looked at my I looked at my playlist. 11 out of 10 production value, free-to-play corner is what we'll call this. I know you talked a little bit about the Fragpunk's closed alpha on last week's show, Jeff. I listened to that, and so I just have a little bit to add to that discussion from last week. And what I think it, what kind of blows my mind about Fragpunk's, and for people who maybe didn't hear last week's, it is a hero shooter in the vein of Valorant, where you are buying your weapons mid-match and each hero has a certain power. And then what this adds to it, Fragpunk's adds to it, it are these power-ups that are a little RNG. You have a selection of them before the match and you kind of vote, put your points towards which ones you want. And then you see what the other team has. And they are modifiers. So like big head mode, more health, you can hide in the grass or something like that. So like modifier, so it's not just running dust over and over again, you know, Call of Duty or something, right? Where you like, it tries to tweak that gameplay a little bit.
And they're what in the form of cards.
Yes, they are technically cards, but they also get deployed at the start of the match. I think from the trailer, it looked like maybe you were in the thick of it and you could be like, oh, use this card, rip, and then modify the game. But it starts that way. So whatever cards your team has elected to use for that round start at the beginning of that round. The main thing that blows me away about Fragpunk's and this closed alpha is that it is a 2025 game, and it does not feel like a 2025 game. It feels like it could have been out 2 months ago game. It felt so polished in this closed alpha. And I mean, from the visual presentation, as you mentioned, Jeff, it does what the David Ayer's Suicide Squad was trying to do, but in a good way, if that makes sense. Like neon, graffiti, like electric tagging or something like that.
Well, almost like, you ever like, do you ever see the Mitchells versus the Machines?
Yes. You know? Yes, that's a great pull. Yes.
Yeah, it's sort of like that, but if the Mitchells were shooting them in the head.
Yes. And I could not believe how polished it felt. I was expecting, you know, maybe if it were like the Rogue Prince of Persia, which is out in early access, I'd be like, this game is fantastic already. I mean, it felt more polished to me than even Hades 2, which is in early access as well. Like, this game felt very, very complete in this closed alpha. And the other thing that I wanted to mention that I don't think you all discussed last week that I think is interesting about it in this, you know, Counter-Strike, Valorant, whatever style of game where you are picking your loadout at the start, when you die, you lose that weapon that you had for, I forget how long, a match, a couple of matches, whatever it is. So it forces variety in a really interesting way. And it also forces you to be competent with more Everything. Than one weapon be very competent with one weapon.
Yeah. So even if you don't die round to round, right, you still have to reselect.
No, if you can reselect, if you are alive, oh, I believe it's
I
been a week.
I never was,
now.
So I never found out. But I assumed.
I think if you're alive, you get to keep your thing. It's if you die in there, you're like, well, you've spent that.
So you have this pool of potential weapons as your primary weapon, as your secondary weapon. You have this pool of potential weapons, and you can select whichever weapon you want, but that pool is going to get smaller and smaller and smaller as you die. So do you want to save your best weapon for later rounds? Or later, you know, or do you want to try to maximize your potential as early as possible? It's really kind of a fun push and pull with that. You're right. I didn't mention that last week, and I do think that is a kind of a neat feature.
Yeah. And then my questions about it are whether or not the RNG nature of the cards will be fun or frustrating. You know, I think it is still a game with a high skill level requirement to get into. It is a, you know, competitive shooter. It is not a casual, it's not a Fortnite with your buddies and you're just kind of going around collecting perks. It is, you know, more akin, as I mentioned, Valorant a whole bunch already. It is that style of game. So I could see folks getting very frustrated if you don't even have what feels like a good card to select from. There is that RNG nature to it that I think could be interesting. But then the other thing, the big question I have is like, if this is still 2025, I'm curious how many modes they launch with. I'm curious what they're holding back. Cause again, this closed alpha, I think I played probably like 3 hours max. I wasn't swimming in it all week, but I put a good amount of time into it and it felt playing on PC. I think that's maybe only where it was, but it's coming to consoles. It felt incredible. I mean, I was blown away by how polished it was. Fragpunks is doing a lot right already.
How is it going to compete with Overwatch 2 and Valorant? And there's other heroes, Concord.
Yes, like, there's so many.
Suicide Squad is still trying to get more out there.
Marvel Rivals.
Yeah,
Like the whole genre immediately got very crowded, or is about to get very crowded.
Star Wars Hunters, also excellent. That's only on mobile and Switch at this point.
Right, but I put a little bit of that. It's fun.
It's super fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the question, though. That's the question is, like, not all of these hero shooters are going to survive. And
there's got to be one in Fortnite, too, right? With all the Fortnite creative stuff
I'm sure there is somewhere in there. But Epic doesn't have an official one, but I bet they're just waiting. You know, like,
it feels like
they'll have all those Disney characters, you know, all of them and all the other ones that they've got.
Yeah.
Put the turtles into a hero shooter. I mean, it's good. That's nuts. All they got to do is turn the knobs, man. Fortnite's just going to crush that stuff out there.
So true.
It's crazy.
So that's the question is, like, is Fragpunk's differentiators enough? We won't know for a while, but I do think, like you, Christian, I'm not even a fan of this style of game, and I came away pretty impressed with it. So we'll see. But like you said, Concord got a lot of buzz, and there's all these, and that Valve Deathlock.
Something like that.
Valve's doing a hero shooter. Like, everybody's got a hero shooter.
Is X Defiant another shooter?
Yes, it absolutely is. Yeah.
I mean, I don't have time to play all this free to play. I feel like with free to play, because I review games, and I feel like with free to play, I don't know how much value my review of this free thing is. It's free. Just if you want to play it, just play it. You know?
Yeah. No, you're right. You know? I think, you know, time becomes the currency, right? Am I going to spend my time on this? But that's what I was talking about last week. That was my biggest thing is, like, I'm not the biggest fan of this particular genre, but how do you choose? It's like, you know, they all seem very competent, and I think the differentiators are few and very granular, but we'll see.
Do you play Overwatch 2 at all, Christian?
I played a lot of Overwatch 1. I didn't play much 2. I had a falling out of love with Activision when all the Bobby stuff came out.
Yeah.
And I have not come back to it now that Bobby is gone. I was very excited about the PvE announcement, you know, 5-7 years ago, and I played that at BlizzCon, but that never materialized.
Yeah, and they cut all that, yeah. Do you think that was a, because Overwatch 2 hasn't done well at all comparative to the first one? Do you think that it was a lot of the Activision, you know, all the crap that came out of the news around Activision that really soured people on the sequel?
I think those are great questions. I hopefully we get the Harvard Business Review article about it one day. I think there are so many questions about any of these games that kind of didn't live up to potential. I think Overwatch a little bit, a great game, and I put hundreds of hours into. I think a little bit they were trying to make fetch happen from Clueless, the way everyone was trying to make esports happen in a way that it looked like it would, but it never did. You know, they had people spending millions of dollars, I think tens of millions of dollars, to buy a franchise for an esport, and it was going to be this huge thing. And it's hard to say what the pandemic did to all that, but I mean,
Riot figures it out though. Somehow, like, everybody's playing Valorant, and that, you know, and they're making esports content around Valorant. It's a world I don't know much about because it's free to play, but it seems incredibly popular, where I don't hear anybody talking about Overwatch 2 anymore.
Well, Blizzard invested tons of energy and money into making
the Overwatch League
esport happen.
Yeah.
And did it in a way that if you had come to me beforehand and asked, hey, what is the way that's going to make it work? I would have outlined something very similar to what they did. I would have thought that's the way to do it. Make it, you know, tie it to regions, like really make it feel like sports teams. And they put tons of money into it. It looked very professional. They had, you know, an incredible facility. Nope. You know, it all came crashing down. And so I don't know. I mean, clearly my instincts were wrong. If
COVID must have been a part of that too.
Undoubtedly, but I don't think it's the entire story.
No,
you know?
No.
So, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
But Christian, speaking of free to play things, if you want to know why people put out free to play games, another game on your list, Zenless Zone Zero, just touted 50 million downloads in its
Amazing.
First week. That's why you put out a free-to-play game.
Yeah.
I just like knowing that I was one of those, you know, like I'm so cool. I'm one of those.
You
are
38,478,000.
It would have been nothing without me.
Part of the Poyoverse.
Yeah. It would have been nothing without me. So I have some broad thoughts I want to say about, you know, my, like I said, my free-to-play playing these past couple of weeks that I think are telling about me as a person, a gamer, and I think perhaps might speak to others that listen to this show as well. But before I get to that, Zenless Zone Zero, I thought was going to be the game that really got me of these. Genshin Impact, I put a little bit of time into. I don't know if you still can't, but back in the day, you couldn't invert the Y axis. I'm a Y axis invert character player.
Me too.
That really threw me off that game, despite everything else about it, like the turn-based combat being exquisite and all that stuff. Zenless Zone Zero, you can invert the Y-axis. Huzzah! And it is, or was pitched, at least I thought it was going to be very Devil May Cry, Bayonetta, action game. And while it is that, I would say, and I probably played 3 hours of this game, so I know there are folks that have played way more than me. But in my hours with the game, I would say that that part of the game is maybe 20%, if I'm being generous. Mm. It might be even a little below that. And the rest of the game, which I think might really, really click with a lot of people, doesn't click as hard for me. The rest of the game, or other parts of the game, feel Persona 4 or 5-ish, where you're kind of going around and having relationships with people and eating ramen and doing these side missions for your business with these characters that seem built to be cosplayed. Like every character you see, it's like, oh my gosh, Comic-Con is going to be covered in these heroes, right? Like, and it's all of that stuff, but wrapped in a gacha. Like it's still a Hoverse game, right? It's still all the gacha mechanics of this character and grinding up, leveling up the character through all of the currencies that exist in the game. But then even the action combat part of it, you are these hackers. There are these voids in the world and people go into them to get resources to pull out, but you get lost in there. It's a really cool concept. I think the way they paint the plot in the beginning of the game is a little muddy, but this idea of there being these mysterious zones that if you're in for too long corrupt you and turn you into this monster, but there are these awesome resources in there, but also the walls are constantly moving, so it's dangerous to go in there. Really, really cool premise. And so you are a character who then guides these folks into these voids. And so that part of the game, you work at a video rental shop, and the production value of this game is just second to none. I mean, it looks incredible. The art style, they just nailed it, like absolutely beautiful. And so you're in the back room of this video store on this huge wall of kind of CRT TVs that all have this really cool, like, you could see this being the album cover for any of the Midnight album, Jeff, you know, like just a perfect retro but modern aesthetic, just absolutely beautiful. And you are doing what could feel like a Marvel's Spider-Man mini game, you know, where you're guiding these characters that are in the void, trying to get the payload and then get out. And as you do things, you hit a button, you got to bring a switch around to open this new path, and you can only guide them in certain ways. Then it resets and you have to, you know, but you're just doing that on these interconnected CRT TVs. And then along that path at random places, there are the narrative is like, oh, watch out, you're going to have combat. You know, I can't get you around to these monsters. And then so you go in there, and then you play as your team of three down in the void to do this action combat. And the action combat, though, is awesome. You're teaming in and out. It's easy enough that you can just have fun doing the flashy moves, you know, kind of like button mashing your way through Marvel versus Capcom 2. But if you really get into it, I think there's a lot of depth there that's tied to some of the gacha mechanics and the roles of your tier level for your characters. And so I totally understand this game being a hit, but I found myself wanting to get into the combat because that's what I was there for. And maybe it was just wrong impressions on my part or wrong expectations. I didn't know so much of the game would be this other stuff and not just this. I pictured it as an open world third person combat game, and it's not that. So while Zenless Zone Zero, I think, does a lot right, it wasn't exactly what I was expecting. And so I think because of that, it's a not for me game per se. But my goodness, I don't know how the studio has all this. I mean, I know how they have all the money now, but the resources to make these games that are just polished and beautiful, and you know, you watch it and you're like, I want to play that, you know, as the attract screen, so to speak, at an arcade. It's so
I got to download that. That
yeah. So
cool.
You're saying, Christian, the combat is what you want. If it was just a higher percentage of the game, you'd be all over this.
The combat is very much what I like when I'm in it. It is just such a small part of the overall package of the game. Again, I've played 3 hours, so maybe that shifts. I don't think so from what I've played and what I've read. But yeah, it's just not the meat and potatoes of the game right now, unfortunately.
Sounds a bit like Persona meets Astral Chain or something like that. It's more sci-fi, right? It's more like modern. It's not like the fantasy stuff that you got.
Correct.
Yes.
Yes. Correct. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Little dot hack.
Yeah. It's gorgeous though, and the characters are all cool, and the weapons they have are neat. You can't escape the gacha and all, you know, all the currencies that are there. But I think it's going to be another. It already is.
I mean,
but
to be a huge hit. I played a fair amount of Genshin, and you could. You know, I mean, people are going to disagree with me, but I felt like I could get along with that game not spending money. There was a lot to play and a lot to do. If you sort of, you know, weren't trying to keep up with the Joneses necessarily, and you just kind of accepted the game on its own terms. Yes, it was all there. Yes, the free-to-play trappings were all there. But for the most part, I had a great time playing Genshin Impact without spending anything. So I don't know if that's still the case.
Do you finish a game like that? Do you finish Genshin Impact? Is there an ending to any of these?
That game is massively huge. I certainly didn't finish it, and I don't know if it is even finishable.
Game, I think, has a 12-hour story. I think Genshin's was maybe 25. Like, they have, but then it's never meant to end. And I agree
with
you, Jeff.
You're on a
treadmill
in those games by design.
I haven't spent anything in Zenless Zone Zero yet either.
Right.
But I think we do a little bit of a disservice to be like, yeah, you don't have to spend anything, which is true, you don't. But I think it's a disservice to just kind of write that off because you are constantly being told how to.
Sure.
Why to?
No,
and there are
it.
Literal roadblocks put in your way to incur the game. It's not an altruistic game.
Right. No, yeah. That's why I don't play the free to play. I mean, that's what it is. You know, with Fortnite, I love that I'm buying these virtual action figures of these characters that I love. You know, like when they put up the turtles, I was like, I kind of want to have, you know, and I don't play it that often, but I was like, I love the turtles and I want that, you know? And so I got them. And so you get a Lego version of the turtle, and you get the turtle that will play all the Rock Band stuff because they put the Fortnite festival into it as part of it now. But yeah, the handout kind of thing, like you should spend, which I know is part of the design, but that always turns me off, whether I'm playing on a mobile thing or, you know, I certainly appreciate the quality of the work in something like Genshin, and the Zenless Zone Zero sounds amazing. Like, I really want to check it out, but that stuff always turns me off.
Yeah, and please don't get me wrong. I tend to be on that side as well. I just, it's hard because there is a lot of game there that can be enjoyed on a certain level, but you're right. It is constantly trying to sell you. And that is a problem. But
I just wish that you could buy these games. I wish that if you really like them, you could just say, here's $50 and I got everything and you're not going to bug me for anything anymore.
You can buy these. It's just $50. You can then spend another 50 and another. You can keep buying it. You don't need to stop buying
it. Oh, I know
it.
That exists. Yeah.
That did not stop Christian from playing another free-to-play game this week.
One more in Christian's free-to-play triangle, the triforce of free-to-play games. The First Descendant, which if I were to shorthand this, it is the Venn diagram is Warframe and Destiny 2, but more Destiny 2 than Warframe. I feel like I've maybe played 4 hours of this game. I want to be upfront about my time investment in these. I don't know. More than Zenless, less than... it doesn't matter. More than Fragpunks, around the same as Zenless, perhaps. This It's third person, Jeff. I know you've played this as well, which is exciting because it's not first person Destiny. That's kind of where the warframiness of it is. I had a really hard go at this game on day one on my computer. I got several hard crashes. I was going to try to fire it up on PS5, but I heard it was awful on PS5 at launch. I've heard it's been patched. Mm. But where I did the bulk of my playing of First Descendant was via GeForce Now. And it, I don't know, whatever it was, maybe it was just the second day there was a patch or that version in the cloud was running better than my local version. Ran great. Ran absolutely great. Played it on my desktop via GeForce Now and on my phone. And of the three, Fragpunks, Zenless Zone Zero, and now The First Descendant, this is the game that clicked with me the most in terms of meeting my expectations. What they showed at Summer Game Fest and what came out during whatever it was, the closed beta, very much represented what this game is. Third person Destiny with a grapple hook. Yay. And then all the free to play crap. Boo. But the shooting combat, I thought they nailed. I thought it's really, really, really fun. And Jeff, I'm curious if it clicked for you at all now that it's third person.
Well, I will say that I also had some technical issues. It's hard to hold that against a game right at launch. I mean, it is probably something that won't exist for the duration of this game's life cycle. But it is true that it launched very rocky, and that is a victim of its own success. People jumping into a free-to-play game on the day it was released, on the weekend it was released, holiday weekend, here in the States at least, lots of time to play it. I'm not going to hold them too feet to the fire too badly about that. It's, you know, it's unfortunate. You don't want to see that, but it's not the kind of thing that's probably going to continue as the game progresses in its life, you know, span. That said, after one of the crashes, I uninstalled this game.
Bye bye.
Yeah,
that's, you know, that's a problem with free to play too. Is just the dismissiveness. The
they're disposable. Right?
They're ephemeral. Yeah, yes. You're just like, okay, bye bye. You know, I don't like that. I wish that games had value. I there's so much work that goes into these things, and then we just go, nah, it's worthless.
I feel bad saying it. I want to be honest, but I feel bad that that's what happened. But I thought this game was as my friend on the Filmcast, Dave Chen, always likes to say, a perfectly cromulent piece of art, a perfectly cromulent game. It's functional. It's where the Warframe stuff comes in, I think, is the most interesting bit, where it's like Destiny 2, except when you pick a class, 15 minutes later, you can pick a different class. You can hop between, in the way that Warframes, you can put on a new frame and it basically is a new class. Here, you acquire heroes, basically, people in the world that you can switch between at any point on the fly, and they have a different skill set, a different, you know, different special moves, you know, different stuff. And I think that's cool. I think the world is really beautiful. It's this kind of, you know, sci-fi thing. The levels that I played eerily reminded me of the beginnings of Destiny. Like, weirdly, like the same look and feel and the way that enemies would the ships would hover down and they drop in.
A lot
and
of just patrols. Like, it felt like patrols or strikes in Destiny.
Very, like, weirdly reminiscent of Destiny. So like, like, I felt like I was in the same places. It was very strange. But I do think the pure mechanical feel of this game is good. I liked the feeling of shooting my gun. I liked the way the enemies were hit by my weaponry. I liked the grappling hook. I liked moving around. There was a lot. What's that?
Who made it?
It's Nexon.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, okay, so made out of Korea or something, or like,
yeah,
Nexon,
I mean, it's published
internal?
And developed by Nexon, so I would assume that it is. Yeah.
Okay. So they've been playing a lot of stuff from Bungie and Warframe, Digital Extremes.
It does feel like a riff on other games. And honestly, the reason I uninstalled it so quickly is it just did not, you start the game, you do a tutorial mission, that's fine. There's this giant boss that's like, you could do all these cool things, grapple to it and cool the thing. And I was like, and I shot it 15 times and it keeled over. And I was like, oh, I didn't need to do any of that stuff. I get it. Tutorial mission, fine. Get in, do a few missions. I'm playing with a friend even. A friend and I got on to play together. Oh, wow. So I'm doing the co-op thing.
Yeah, I was busy. It's cool.
No. You were busy. hello, you were vacationing all week. The things you do were basic. The mission, I would complete a mission without even knowing that I had done it. It would be like, I would kill a bunch of stuff that materialized in front of me and like, mission complete. And I'm like, oh, really? I didn't even know what I was doing here. It just felt very generic. The whole thing felt just sort of like you're doing the thing that you know how to do. There's nothing special about it. And, you know, I just was not hooked at any point in the process. And a perfectly cromulent game, playable for free. If it hadn't crashed, I probably would have kept playing it. But it crashed and I was like, you know, I'm done. I'm done with this. I got everything I needed out of it.
To add to that or expand on that, I think those are what I would call the strike type missions that you were doing or the patrol type missions where you're on this open environment and you tap into this hologram and then it tells you to do a thing. What I love about those is that it tells you about how long they take to complete, which I know other games do as well, but I always love seeing that where you're like, oh, I have 20 minutes to play. I can play this versus this is going to be a 2-hour raid with my friends or 14 hour raid with my friends.
Yeah.
And the bigger missions I think are a little more structured than that. And I think what this game's secret sauce could be is regular updates. You know, I love Destiny 2. I just praised the crap out of the Final Shape not too long ago. I thought that campaign was exquisite, but that game has had a real up and down with getting its content out and its seasons and when the raids come out. And a lot of that content, in my opinion, is kind of underwhelming. And if the First Descendant is able to do the free-to-play live service thing well, the good part of that, right, where all the whales' monies get spent developing new content and new missions, I think this could be something really special. 7 years ago, Jeff, we had a joke on a thing we were working on about Warframe, how it should still be game of the year every year back then. Maybe it was 10 years ago. Because it was a game that came out underwhelmed, and then whatever it was 3 years later, Digital Extremes was like, oh, we figured it out. And it was huge, and it's still huge. And so I think the First Descendant really has an opportunity to be that. It's not that yet, but I think it has a chance.
I don't disagree with anything you've said. My counterpoint is, and this is the position in which I find myself. So this is a very singular perspective that I don't intend it to speak universally about the game. But for me, what's happening with a game like First Descendant is what it is asking of me is very high, right? To take Vic's point, this is not a game that comes out, I spend $50 on, I play for 8 to 12 hours, and I complete it, and then I move on to the next game. What it is asking me to do is to be here for a long time. The proposition it's making for me is fall in love with me so that I become your everyday game. Come back all the time, grind, get these other things, go, you know, really invest in me. This is not a casual acquaintance proposition that this game is making. And my response to that is, okay, then you better be exceptional, right? And I think that's kind of the problem with a lot of these games as service games is like, I am perfectly fine playing a above average game for a short period of time. I have a great time playing above average games that I can play start to finish and be like, wow, that was interesting. And I had a really interesting time with it. These games are not asking that of me as the player. They are saying, hey, make this your lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And if that's going to be the case, I'm not going to play you if you're just above average, right? That's not enough for me to devote the kind of time and energy that these type of games ask of the players or are willing to provide to the players. Like they're here to give you tons of stuff to do all the time. And it's like, that's cool on a certain level, but also that is a very few and far between proposition I'm willing to make with a game. And if I'm going to make it, it's going to be a game that it just knocks my socks off.
Do you have one of those types of games, Jeff?
I mean, the easy answer for me is World of Warcraft, right? World of Warcraft has been that game for me for over a decade, right? When a new expansion comes out, I want to live and breathe that all the time, right?
Right.
And it's true that games move in and out of that space for me. So it's not like I have to commit to a game for years and years for it to be like Helldivers 2 was that for a pretty short period of time, all things considered, but it was an extremely satisfying period of time, right? Like that, I was willing to make that my can't wait to get in on this. What am I doing today? You know, what's the next mission? What's my next thing I'm going to upgrade? Like I was into it because that game was exceptional or is still exceptional. But for me, like a game like The First Descendant may eventually become that, as Christian points out, with that Warframe did. But now I'm trying to tie this feeling that I'm having to a state of the industry that we find ourselves in where, you know, like, for example, we just talked about Exoprimal.
Yeah.
Like Exoprimal is another perfect example. I played Exoprimal at launch and it was fine. It's fine. But like less than a year later, that game is being sunsetted in a certain respect. And that's the reason is because I'm not going to
play Suicide Squad.
I didn't even play that. No,
I beat the story on it and I played a couple of after story missions just because I reviewed it.
Yeah,
my vantage point has always been I review these things, you know, and so my expectation is that I'm going to get to a point where I can talk about it and then I'm moving on to something else. And there are so many games that aren't built like that. And I think that companies have had some really Hoyoverse, or how do you say it, Christian?
Is that how you say Hoyoverse?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's an example of it working. Fortnite's an example of it working.
Yeah.
But I think you're right, Jeff. I think this idea that there can be multiples of that and they are successful, like I think we're seeing the exact opposite of that reality play out again and again and again. And from some really competent studios, you know, stumbling and fumbling. Concord, I think, should have come out. It's coming out at a price point, right? I think that actually might be one of the, because I think that is a huge part of why Helldivers 2 worked and clicked. I think if it had come out as a free-to-play game, there would have been skepticism right away. There would have, it may not have clicked right away that the way that it, and it also had some issues when it launched. It had some issues with the PlayStation Network requirements for PC players out there. The fact that it launched on PC and PlayStation at the same time was obviously really important and special for that game as well. But I think that there was an associated value and the game wasn't asking you for money all the way along. It was all completely up to you whether you wanted to spend to have the in-game dollars and that stuff. It would never felt like the game had its hand out and it was so special.
I think
if Concord does it, that might actually work out for that game as well.
No, you make an excellent point. You make an excellent point. And I think, this is a little bit of the old guys getting around and telling the kids to get off the lawn episode, which is totally fine. Yeah. And I'm down for, I'm always down for, but I say that to say, you know, we all lived through a period, 20 years ago when the Concords and Marvel Rivals and all of the hero shooters that are coming out that all want you to make them your lifestyle. 20 years ago, those same games would have been 8-hour first person shooters.
Oh, right. Yes. Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They all would have been an 8-hour campaign first person shooter game that would have come out and they would have all been competing with each other, but I would have played every one of them. Would there still have been failures of that bunch? Probably. But I think it's a different proposition to ask a player, an audience to say, hey, play our game and then move on to the next one. Or, hey, play our game forever You know what I mean? I think it's a different proposition, and I think that's inherently why people there's more losers in this category, in these categories, because you're simply asking more of your audience, you know?
And you're cannibalizing all of the competition, and you're sucking all the oxygen out of the room. And I it kind of baffles me that the industry has leaned so heavily in this direction, knowing the risks, and also knowing that if you are successful, you're going to have developers chained to their work forever, and they're going to burn out on it, you know, and it just becomes part of it. And you're also saying, this is successful, and the other at-bats that we have with these other things that are for purchase, they don't get the attention anymore, you know? And then you start cutting and slice. It just feels counterintuitive. And again, it comes down to spreading the idea that games have no monetary value unless you want to customize them and express yourself, and you have so much money, it doesn't matter. And the games lean in that direction for its business. It's like, we really want the people that have so much disposable income to buy these things, so then we're a big successful monetary, you know, juggernaut, you know? Well, but I say that also with Fortnite and, you know, Destiny, and there are games that have really shown that there's tremendous value in the communities that they build, and you play them together in this friendship. Fortnite, I think, is special because of its licensing and
Vic is just saying, put turtles in your games and he will buy them.
Well, I think
that's turtles in your games, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, but you can't do that for Call of Duty Warzone. The minute they start to throw in these weird comic-y things into
a
Warzone,
turtle in that game, I'll turtle.
They've done it.
They do it, but it feels weird. It feels totally incongruous.
I think one other point, and then I think this conversation transitions nicely to my hopefully little bow for my thoughts on my free-to-play couple of weeks here. The other part of this is I'm going to use a strong word, but I'll stand by it. The predatory nature of how these games onboard players.
Yeah.
There is, and having some experience on the developer side of some of these types of games, there is science to the onboarding of players to not only get the people, Vic, that you're talking about with tons of disposable income to happily spend it, but to get people who can't afford it to feel like they have to keep paying.
It's awful,
designed kindly. Not every game, oftentimes. And I think that is highly problematic. The neuroscience research behind getting someone to pay $70 versus getting someone to pay $5 every 3 days, and the amount of money you can make that way, while constantly diminishing the return on the purchase to require a larger or more frequent purchase to get the same dopamine hit that you were getting with the smaller original purchase is purposeful. And when all of the RNG that's happening is behind the scenes of a video game that, again, not all games, but I can 100% say at least one video game, some video games
are— And it doesn't mean the ones we've been talking about, folks.
Yes. I don't know, are manipulating those numbers to string people along the way a drug dealer would give a free sample and then start cutting stuff.
Or a slot machine.
Yes. And so I think to me, my big takeaway from free-to-play games, in addition to what you all said, where I enjoy an ending, I'm old and I enjoy an ending. I enjoy putting Catcher in the Rye down and moving on to Kill a Mockingbird. I enjoy a new experience.
Yep.
The free-to-play game has inherent roadblocks put in it to make the game worse without spending. And I don't know if it's just because I've seen how that sausage is made, but I can't get past the fact that I am playing a less good version of this game, of this core gameplay. Spoiler, Alex Solomon and I talk about this a little bit on an upcoming Feeling This. But the core game that's here, I am playing a less good version of it because all of the monetization is thrown in my way on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a somewhat of an analogous situation here, I think, with network television, which is all advertising based, and it's all about sort of perpetually bringing an audience to the thing, and you know, it's based on selling products in advertising. If you want to get super cynical about it, even monthly comic books. I mean, there is this stringing you along kind of thing that happens across entertainment. It's not just around games like this, But I always think about that destructive kind of quality of content like this that doesn't allow for people to make space in their week to play other things. It just blows me away that the industry has bent over backwards so much to accommodate all of these free experiences of different quality and different value, gameplay wise, and moved away from propping up some excellent games that aren't forever games, you know, and those, whether they're small games or large games, they're banging drums and hoping for some kind of attention. And I know, you know, you can see this, the financial giants and the successes. And I know that there's a very real cost associated with having these developers be staff members, not just for hire mercenaries like film companies and film studios hire to make all of these different projects. They actually have these studios flush with people and they got to keep them busy. And one way to keep them busy all the time is to work on games that never end. But all of it just feels, I don't know, like, I know that there are big successes and big hits out there with huge audiences, but I know that there's lots of games that are struggling with smaller audiences, and all of it just feels like you're asking people to choose the clubhouse that they want to get in, you know, join so that they can get into this thing. And I don't know, it just doesn't feel healthy. It doesn't feel like a healthy way to kind of work with consumers out there, to me.
Well, I want to ask you a question about this, Vic, and you're free to decline to answer, and we can even edit this out if you so choose. But I've never really had this conversation with you, and I'm curious how you approach it with your daughter.
Because I've been straight up with her. Yeah, no, like Jeff, we had this amazing conversation, my daughter and I, in Toys R Us, and it was about blind boxes, because blind boxes became a very big thing and YouTube was very complicit in having all of these, you know, kid oriented shows just opening boxes and having that kind of Christmas surprise on a regular basis. And I talked to her in a Toys R Us aisle about, and she, I don't know, maybe 4 years old or something. And I said, all of this marketing, all of this clamor around this moment is very on purpose. It's very specific and it's very driven to get you hooked on buying lots of things, and you don't know what's going to be in every box. And it's part of the video game industry. It's part of a lot of other industries where there's this constant pull to spend to have that unboxing kind of feeling. And it's much better to have an idea of what you're actually spending your money on, and thinking about, you know, monetary resources as not being endless, and to kind of shift your focus away from just that, you know, cracking open the box kind of euphoria. And a mom, it was something like that. I'm paraphrasing everything from years ago, but a mom that overheard us came over and said, "I can't believe that you're having this conversation. And I had never thought about that. My daughter asks for these, you know, blind boxes all the time. And you're absolutely right. This is such a, it's gross. It's gross that we're marketing to people that don't know better, that no, you should know what you're spending your money on. Always. You should have a sale of goods. You should have an idea. And it's very gross. And Christian, you're right. There's a lot of psychological work behind the scenes, which is somewhat analogous to the attract screens on arcade games and how they would pull you in to drop another quarter. Mm. But we're talking about quarters, not, you know, tens of dollars or $20 at a time or $50 or thousands of dollars at a time that some of this stuff is. And I know that there's been some looking into this and people trying to do this right and figure this out. And I there is a business there. And again, I keep propping up Fortnite, but I think they've kind of figured it out. You know, they've given players tons of value for the time that they spend and the money that they spend. And even if the currencies don't, you know, equate with actual dollars, they got to buy the V-Bucks and stuff. All of that is kind of duplicitous too, because you always end up, it's total carnival games BS, you know, where you end up with tickets that you haven't used yet. And it's all meant to pull you to go back and spend those tickets again. So right from the beginning with my daughter, that was very upfront. I told her, this is my job. You know, this is what I do. I talk about this stuff. I'm a critic of this business. I've never been into this mobile stuff. And even today, she likes Roblox and there's a couple of other things in there, but we don't really buy her currencies or anything like that. Every once in a while for a Christmas gift or something, we'll get her a little bit of something that way. But we have an Apple Arcade subscription, and I tell her the reason why we have that and Netflix games are, you know, subscription is because they don't have microtransactions. They're not trying to bleed you. They're not trying to hook you on spending. And so, yeah, I've been very, you know, I hate to come off like I hate that side of the business for companies, because I know it's a hard slog however you do it. And there are some very good businesses and good games and good models and stuff, but I don't know. And I don't know if it's just my age or whatever. I just feel like it's just not healthy to creativity and the longevity to create this discussion with people or this conversation with people and trying to make half the game about how long can I play this game without buying anything, you know, without spending any money. And I just feel like, no, I was in that audience when Iwata-san at GDC said it's a race to the bottom. And now I know they went, Nintendo did free to play stuff too, so they went back on their word. But I was in that audience and I was like, yeah, man, because we saw this wave on mobile. This is all the offshoots of mobile gaming. You know, we saw you know, there were some huge gangbuster games out there. And I heard Iwata say that this is a race to the bottom. Games need to have a value. And it's like, yeah, I absolutely subscribe to that philosophy. If we train people to think that there is no, you know, value associated with this, that there isn't a cost associated with this, it's disposable. And that's exactly what we're seeing. We're seeing games just scrubbed off the face of the earth. And that is sad, because that represents art. It represents thousands of hours of people's love to try to build something, and it didn't have an audience that was willing to. There were no whales we captured with our free to play thing, so it's been scrubbed off the face of the earth. It just seems very sad to me, you know. Yeah,
well said. Yeah, well said. And I appreciate you being so honest about it. I'll start my playlist with the opposite end of the spectrum. I was going to save this for last, but I feel it's appropriate to say right now, because as much as I share all of those feelings, and as is probably obvious to the audience that has heard me talk about them, I did have a really wonderful experience with my son and video games this week. Tom Merritt, of all people, gave me a bunch of old Nintendo Labo boxes that years ago he gave these to me before I had kids. He gave them to me. I'm like, hey, do you want these? And I was like, sure. And they've been sitting in my closet since. And my son, in love with all things Nintendo, saw them, found them.
Dad, what's this in your closet? Don't look at that, son. What about this? That you can look at, son.
So we had built a couple of the Labo things. I think I've mentioned it on the show a few times in the past. And he built the motorcycle one with the little motorcycle handlebars. He built the there's one other one. The fishing rod one, like a fishing reel one. Loved it. It's so cool. They're so well done. But again, way past. I missed the party on this one. Right. Yeah. They stopped making these years ago. The one. And these were relatively small, pretty quick projects. The one that I had sitting in the closet the longest was the biggest, most sort of intense build of the Labo, which, if people don't remember what Labo is, I should reiterate. It's basically paper craft, cardboard craft. It's Nintendo's weird experiment of creating these cardboard things that you buy all flat. You pop them out and it's got really wonderfully delivered instructions via the Switch that give you a step-by-step, almost Lego-like experience in constructing these papercraft creations. And then they also have software that you put into the Switch that then gives functionality to the thing you just built. So, for example, the little steering wheel has almost like a first-person Excite Bike mini game that you control with the handlebars. Really cool. Fishing game, etc. Well, the last one that we hadn't done was, I don't know if you guys remember this, but they pulled out a full-on Robomech suit.
Right,
a backpack, a visor. You put your hands on these pistons that are connected via strings to the backpack. You put your feet in stirrups that are also connected via strings. It's a full-on robotic, you know, like robot jock style controller robot. And then the game, the video game that you put into the Switch, you then control one-to-one this robot. So you want it to throw a punch, you know, extend your fist. You want it to fly, you put your arms out like wings, and then it takes off with jets and rockets and stuff. Pretty slick. My son built this thing all by himself using the Labo instructions on the Switch.
How old is he now?
He's about to turn 8. So he turns 8 in September. Yeah.
That's great.
Super proud of him. Like his tenacity. There was only a couple of times he asked for help. Just for me tying the string basically was the hardest part for him. And it's like the nerdiest thing you've ever seen, where this kid is just decked out in cardboard, you know, like the nerdiest thing, but it makes my heart so warm and proud.
Yeah, man.
Cause he just loves it so much. There's not a hint of self-consciousness, you know, he's just like wearing the visor to dinner, you know, we're eating at the table and he just wants to have the cardboard visor on cause he just loves it so much. So that warms my heart that he's just, you know, completely unselfconscious and just thinks it's the coolest thing. But then the game itself really impressed me. It is not – I thought it was basically just like you do a couple of things, crappy, you know, shovelware. But it's actually –
Nintendo doesn't do shovelware, man.
You're
that's
right.
The thing.
The
little mini games, they've always – like even WarioWare stuff. It's like, wow, it's so clever.
There's tons of stuff to do with the robot. You level up. The coolest thing, fellas, is you also make this paper craft bolt that's, I don't know, about 5-6 inches long. It's this giant bolt. And there are holes in the backpack. And somehow – the game, if you put the bolt in the hole and start rotating it, the game senses that, and that's how you like change the color of your robot and tweak.
Wow. Do you put a Joy-Con into the thing?
But it's only two Joy-Cons. Yeah. There's one in the backpack and one in your hand. I don't know how it gets enough inputs with the feet and because you walk and the robot walks. You know, you crouch down and the robot transforms into a tank. It's the coolest thing. And
that's so rad.
Freaking loves it. Anyway, so super late to the party, ladies and gentlemen, because they don't even make these anymore. But I think you can still get your hands on them via eBay and Amazon. But I was really impressed with the Nintendo Labo robot backpack. I don't even know what it's called. Technically, but
that's so cool.
Very fun. We had a great weekend with it. It was like, it's all he wants to do now. And now we're like, oh, now he's obsessed with this. And it was really fun.
Cardboard is a kid's best friend, isn't it? Like daughter's still playing with cardboard and we'll talk about it in a second here, but
right? The box is more fun than the thing that's in the box, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So one more thing on my playlist I wanted to mention, and that is, a game that was, I forgot to pull the name of the person. Somebody sent me an email suggesting this game. I apologize to the person who was so kind as to send this in. I didn't grab your name. But they sent me this as the perfect Jeff game. They said, oh, Jeff, you're going to love this game. You got to check it out. It's only available as a demo right now. The game itself comes out, I think, in a month or two. But I did download the demo for a game called Crossover Roll for Initiative. It's available on Steam. The craziest thing, Vic, and you will appreciate this, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The logo that comes up when you turn this game on is MicroProse.
Oh, nice.
I was like, what is that line from Obi-Wan Kenobi? That is a name I haven't heard. I was like, MicroProse? That's
so
an
cool.
Oldie. And
that's
it's got
Zork.
That same. Yeah, that old, I mean, that was Infocom. MicroProse was like.
Oh, Infocom. Okay.
MicroProse was like the, those old like strategy games. I don't know,
yes.
Old company. Anyway, Crossover Roll for Initiative is a brilliant idea. This is, you play, these are modules for a Dungeons and Dragons session, like a D20 game. And you are literally the view of the game is a character sheet. It's like a classic D&D character sheet. Character name, you know, race and class and hit points and stats, right? And it just looks like a character sheet with like hand-drawn numbers in the boxes and stuff. And what happens is little creatures, the idea is that you're playing a tabletop game, but computer game bad guys are attacking you.
Oh, so you've got cool.
You got this paper a character sheet on a table, and then these digital little monsters come marching out and start attacking all of the numbers on the sheet.
Oh, that's awesome. That's very Archon-like.
Yes. Yes. Very Archon.
Yeah, that's so cool.
And so you have to destroy the characters before they take your stats down. So if wow. they take your HP number to zero, you die. If they take your wisdom down, you start losing the ability to cast spells, et cetera, et cetera. So they're literally attacking your stats in real time, and you're trying to cast spells at them, almost like missile command, like dragging a line to them to blow them up. Now, how do you cast spells? Well, that's where the game gets really diabolical, because on the right-hand side of the screen, you have a giant grid of dice, polyhedral dice, Dungeons and Dragons type D10s, D12s, D8s, D20s, D6s, D4s, all in this giant grid. And what that is a match three game.
Match three. Jesus, I'm looking at the video stuff. It's incredible, man. So I'm totally downloading this.
This is wild. You're match three-ing dice that then let you spend those matches on spells. So let's say you have an axe that does 1d4 plus 2 damage. Well, what do you need to cast that? You need some d4s. So you got to match three d4s on the match three game in order to power up the ability to spend it to do your axe attack. So you look and you go, okay, well, I got my major attacks are like a d8, a d12, and a d4. So you're looking for those matches. But you're doing that, your brain is like breaking because you're doing this match three game, and then you're also having to cast spells. And in real time, you know, this sort of tower defense game is happening where the creatures are attacking your HP. You're like, I got to do this. Oh, I ran out of spell. Oh, I got to go over here and match three. And so you're doing these completely disparate activities in your brain at the same time.
That is awesome.
So clever.
It reminds me of Rampart as well. Did you ever play Rampart, where you had to kind of Tetris the wall together, and then you're shooting at all these ships and things that were coming to get you? Super cool.
Don't recall that game exactly, but the name sounds familiar. I don't remember.
Oh, it's great. That's so rad.
It's such a clever thing. It's much for me, much harder than it sounds, because my brain stopped working at a certain point, but it's really cool. It's just like, oh my God, I can't see the right things over here because you're doing these two things at the same time.
Yeah.
Very different from one another. Very clever game. And the cool thing is that, you know, the demo only has a small amount of content in it, but it hints at the fact that you'll have these different modules that'll do different settings and different monsters. And there's actually a storyline too, because you'll have these little moments from the module that'll make you make decisions like, oh, there's, you know, bad guys in a cave. Do you run away? Do you attack them? Do you offer them food? And then based on what you do, certain things can happen. So it has some story elements too. Very clever game.
And totally a Jeff game. They were so right.
It's true. It like mixes a lot of my old favorites. And I think this the presentation is kind of primitive. It's not a game that's going to dazzle you visually, but it totally works and it's really fun. Crossover Roll for Initiative is what it's called. All right, well,
that's rad.
As usual, when Vic's here, we go long, and I appreciate it. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Victor Lucas, as always, it's so much fun talking to you. It's always such a great time. Thank you for being here.
Oh, man, I love this. I love this. Have me anytime. Anytime you guys need me, I'm here. This is a total treat.
Very honored much appreciate it. And we will take you up on that. In the meantime, tell folks where they can keep up with you and all the great stuff that you're doing online.
Well, I'm busy making stuff across a variety of different platforms like you have to these days. I do have my own podcast. It's called Vic's Basement, which is a mix of discussion around topical things. But the other beautiful thing is that I get to interact with a lot of game developers out there. And some of them recently have been people that I've known for decades and kind of re-catching up with them because I've been running all the classic stuff. So Vic's Basement is a podcast. All of the content that I make, you can kind of find on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/EPNTV. And you'll be able to watch the classic shows there and all the new content that I make, the new reviews and interviews and preview stuff. And then I've got a TikTok, and it's the Electric Playground. And I'm on Twitter, Victor_Lucas. And I'm out there. Just search for Electric Playground.
Yeah, you won't regret it. It's great stuff. Great stuff. Also, I just wanted to mention the person who sent me a crossover role for Initiative is Mike from Madison, Wisconsin, who sent the email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Thank you, Mike, for that great recommendation. I was not aware of that game at all before, Mike. Christian Spicer, what do you got going on this week?
I write a conversational newsletter about video games called Let's Chat Games that people can subscribe to for free. And then there's never any microtransactions along the way, believe it or not. You can read the whole thing. You can find it at christianspicer.substack.com. The one most recent one that came out, I wrote about franchise fatigue, but perhaps not from the view that you're thinking. Looking back at the past console generations and the number of incredible franchises that lived on them compared to the generation we're in now, in what is happening to the idea of a franchise. So folks can find that over there. Again, that's christianspicer.substack.com. And then Jeff, you and I on DLC's socials are putting up some short 1 minute video. It's like exclusive content to that. It's not part of the show. I think last week you asked me what my favorite Resident Evil of all time is. It's fun questions like that, little hot takes. And you can find those on Instagram, where we are DLC Hype Train, or on YouTube, where we are at DLC Pod. I think you are muted.
I said, indeed, indeed. Great stuff. I also want to remind people that Feeling This Fridays are happening. So don't forget those. Christian and Alex Solomon are just doing great stuff on that show as well. You can follow me on socials at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. I have other shows, including the Film Cast, We Have Concerns, the Fan Controlled Show, and the Book Club. We have Concerns. Did I say that one already? Anyway, other shows, you can find me online. Wherever you get podcasts, I'm there. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion. Vic, do you have something to help people get through their week?
Yeah. That's not video game related.
Sure. It can be anything, but yeah, generally speaking.
Well, we've been a family that has picked up baseball gloves along the way. And my daughter has outgrown her little baby one that we had for a long time. She's wearing my t-shirts now, which is crazy. So get ready for that, Jeff. So all those cool video game t-shirts that I've had, she's been grabbing them off of the pile, and she'll show up for school, and it's like, oh my God, I remember that game, which is surreal. But we went and bought my wife another baseball glove. And then so a few times already this summer, we've all just gone off and played catch together, the three of us. And man, that's therapy. It's just amazing. You know, it's just so wonderful to just take this breath outside, throw the ball around, sun's going down. So that's been super fun. And the other thing, I'm on a Walton Goggins kick since Fallout. And I didn't ever finish Justified the first go around. I got deep into the seasons and I love that show. But I've been going back and watching Justified. And man, that show is incredible if you've never seen that. Timothy Oliphant is also a total gift. That guy is just so good. He can deliver the comedy. He's so droll. He is He's an amazing guest on Conan O'Brien's podcast and stuff too. If you ever get a chance to listen to that, he's super funny, but he's just great. And that show is just wonderful to get. So I haven't watched the final season or the, you know, the Primeval one. I never went back and watched that. So I'm kind of building to that. But I loved it. Walton Goggins on Fallout. He was so good.
Yes, agreed. Yeah. Justified is one of my all-time faves. My favorite line from that show is at one point, Timothy Oliphant takes a bullet and tosses it at a bad guy's chest. And he goes, "The next one's coming at you quicker."
Oh, that's great.
That's so great. Good.
Is that like ripped right from Elmore Leonard? Is that?
Yeah,
is that,
I think did they pull so.
That's wonderful. That's like a film noir almost. It's like Sam Spade, you know? It's so freaking good.
Oh, awesome, man.
I love it.
Yeah. Primeval is also excellent. You're in for a treat. It's a wonderful revival. They did a great job.
And is it done now? Like, are they ever going to go back to it, or was that it?
Done, but we'll see.
There's probably spoilers in even having that combo, but I can't wait to see it.
Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
For folks in the U.S. or visiting the U.S. or perhaps internationally, there's maybe an equivalent, but just a shout out to national monuments, which are different than national parks. I think in the U.S., people think about going on vacation to national parks, Yosemite, Yellowstone, and these are very amazing, but also since COVID and still today, very crowded. And national monuments aren't advertised as well. There's a couple of distinctions about them. National monuments usually only have like one, or they're kind of protected because of one interesting thing, whereas a national park is a collection of interesting things. But also, national parks require an act of Congress to create, whereas a national monument can be done through a presidential decree. So a little easier to make. And some things start as national monuments and become national parks. But just recently, we were out in far away from Jeff in Colorado, the other edge, practically Utah. But we went to Colorado National Monument. It's like you're on another planet. Just absolutely beautiful. It's there near Grand Junction. If you're, doing Moab or something like that, totally recommend it. Did a couple of hikes, just did the drive through it. Absolutely beautiful mesas and rock structures that you think that, like, you know, if you leaned on it, the whole millions of years of geology would just tumble down a mountain. But I would encourage folks to look into national monuments throughout the U.S. They are not just buildings. I think people think it's going to be like, oh, this is a fort or something like that. It is not always that. A lot of them are nature preserves, and they're usually less crowded than the parks.
Yeah, that Christian, sounds awesome. Christian found a way to come to Colorado and stay as far away from me as he could.
I dipped my toe in and I was like, this is good enough.
My parting gift is a YouTube channel that needs none of my help. They do very, very well. But it's something that was new to me. I have been trying to limit very severely the amount of YouTube my children watch. And in fact, we have a new rule that we have to watch YouTube together if we're going to watch it.
It's a great rule. It's incredibly insidious on YouTube, and the algorithms are all about serving up brutal things. We have the same rule in our household too.
Well, I don't know if you are aware of this channel, but I think it's really inspiring. It's the That's Amazing YouTube channel. This is a family from, I believe, Madison, Wisconsin, I want to say. A family of kids that have all become, I'm sure, millionaires because they have tens of millions of subscribers, but they do trick shots. They do wildly inventive trick shots, coming up with crazy ways to throw a phone and have it land right on the charger, to take a dartboard and a roll of tape and throw tape, and then the dart goes through the tape, the hole of the tape roll, and pins right on a bullseye. Like the craziest stuff. And they just brute force all of it. They just do it they get it. And I have been using it as a way to inspire tenacity in my kids.
That's awesome. Like us with this show. We just keep doing it until we get a good one. You know, it's every
maybe someday we will finally get a good one.
when Vic's on, we get close. We're like right around the bullseye.
Closest thing that we've ever gotten.
That's EP's secret too. We just kept going. Yeah. We just kept doing it.
If we don't admit we're doing it wrong, nobody will notice. No, but it's a wonderful lesson in tenacity, because I just keep telling my son in particular, like, hey, all the only secret to this is not giving up. They just keep going. And sometimes their videos take weeks of trying the same thing over and over and over and over and over. It's craziness. That's so cool.
Wasn't there a Dude Awesome or something like that?
Yeah, Dude Perfect is – yeah.
Dude Perfect,
I haven't watched
right.
any of Dude Perfect because we kind of got into
yeah.
it. But I don't know the age of Dude Perfect, but I like this because it's all young kids. It's like
– that's great.
It's, you know, 13, 14-year-old boys that started the channel, and then their younger siblings who are like 6 and 8. And they've been doing it for years, so their ages obviously shift over time. But we're just discovering them, and it's truly is amazing what they do. Like the things
inspiring
that they come
and
up
wholesome.
With. Wholesome. Exactly.
Yeah. That's great.
So anyway, and you can watch that on YouTube Kids as well. It's you don't even need an adult YouTube login. You can do the
I
kids.
Thought it was going to be a show like That's Incredible. Do you guys remember That's
oh, yeah,
Incredible?
I remember That's Incredible.
That was actually an inspiring show for me on my way to making EP. I just thought it was showing all kinds of secret parts of the world that we didn't know about, and fascinating little facts and interesting people and stuff. That was a crazy show.
Oh,
I was a very
that.
Influential show when I was a little kid.
Me too. I loved that show. Yeah. And I think I had a crush on the female host of that show, if I recall correctly.
Kathy Lee Crosby.
Was it Kathy Lee Crosby? Yeah.
Yeah.
With the 80s hair. Gotta love it.
Yeah.
We also got a listener suggested parting gift. This comes to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Kurt from Cincinnati. Kurt writes, my kids and I recently borrowed the board game Slide Quest from our local library. It's essentially a labyrinth marble game, but co-op. Each player controls one or two sides of the labyrinth as you try to navigate a knight on a wheel through the treacherous maps. There are 20 levels to complete, and each one has increasing difficulty with different challenges. It's not always get from point A to point B. The goal sometimes involves picking up items or defeating enemies. It's a lot of fun working together to achieve the goal. My parting gift is Slide Quest, but also go to your local library. They have so many resources at your disposal and that you may not even be aware of. For example, our library loans out books, board games, and puzzles, but they also offer a 3D printing service and a host of retro games for older, or they host a retro games club for older kids, among many other services and clubs. I think libraries are often overlooked in what they provide to local communities. And as the son of a retired librarian, I will always promote their use. Thanks.
That's
Thanks,
awesome.
Kurt. That's Kurt from Cincinnati with his parting gift. I love it. I really appreciate it. If you'd like to have your parting gift read on the show, send it to us, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Victor Lucas and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can get swag for the show at store.dlcpod.com. Of course, our biggest thanks are always reserved for our patrons who make this show possible. You can become one at patreon.com/dlcpod. Our hype train patrons are top tier while they become video games, which we're going to do right now. I love talking about old games. What a great week to talk about old games with Vic Lucas here, who is the king of talking about old games. You can watch him doing it in real time, 1997. But we're going to go in the Wayback Machine, talk about a game. Oh, Christian, the James Wynn game. Remember that one?
I do, and so do my parents, because I was always like, no, I'm going to win this time. I just need one more quarter. Okay, $5 more worth of quarter. Okay, how much of my allowance can I get in advance of? And of course, every single time, it's like pulling the sword and the stone at Disneyland. You know, it never moves for me. And you always get that screen that's just like, James Wynn. I legit thought that if I changed my name to James, my friends and I, we were like, well, at least then we'll find
win.
A way to get to the kill screen. Yeah.
I had a friend who was named James and loved this game. It was his favorite game. And I was like, shut up, Jimmy. Everybody knows your name is Jimmy.
No one calls you James except for your parents when you're in trouble.
James Wynn. No, Jimmy lose.
It was brutal. I feel like now today, and maybe when Vic's episode on this, maybe was it season three? I don't remember. But people will rediscover a way to beat it like they have with Tetris. You know, like you put a sock on your hand and you're actually hitting it from the back. Right. There's got to be a way because that kill screen has been infamous, you know, in terms of
brilliant. Because you'd think you would think there was that driving portion where you're like, I'm in the lead. And be like, meow, James Wynn.
It reminds me of what is it in Jurassic Park where it's and you can't and they're trying to Ned Free, was that his name, trying to undo the hack. That's how James Wynn always felt to me. It was like
James Wynn.
James, what did I say?
Much later, that same friend, I would make fun of him and I would say, Jimmy, eat world.
The weirdest part is that afterwards I would be like, James won. And they'd be like, no, James win. And I was like, it's always in the future perfect. It's always never in the past perfect. Tense.
Oh, I love the sequel, by the way. James win, future perfect.
I wish we could live in that world. That sounds fun.
Really, it got really a little esoteric by that point. Still a good game. Maybe equally good. Do you remember the Radio Controls game?
I remember it as a beacon of 90s gaming because it's Controls with a Z, right?
It's not extreme. It's extreme.
Right. You could have had like remote control, like an RC Pro-Am style game or something like that. But this was Radio Controls. And I loved what they did. And I think they sold, I remember I had the controller, I think it was for Nintendo, maybe Super Nintendo, the era of peripherals that like were only made not by Nintendo or Sega, but it was like these two dials, and for young parents listening with their kids in the car, a radio tuner, and you were kind of like trying to dial this thing in to decrypt the message to learn what happened. It felt like War of the Worlds playing on this beast of like a tape deck. Awesome. Yeah.
It was really ahead of its time because, you know, we had that whole era of post Guitar Hero where you would get like DJ Hero, and it was all about the crazy plastic peripheral that you would get, you know, Steel Battalion. This game way ahead of its time, and with a peripheral that, let's be honest, was good for nothing else but this game. It was really very specific. Fiddling with the dial.
Did you ever?
I've never listened to more static in my life than playing this game.
The best part too is like your parents would be like, what are you guys doing? And you could like lie. You'd be like, we're hobbyist radio control. And
we're
like,
ham operators.
My brothers and I would always try to play with a power pad. Like that was our hack, you know, because we could like get on your hands and tap the buttons really quick. But you lost the fidelity, but you could tune way faster that way.
This game, the audio design of the game in and of itself, way ahead of its time. Because it would be like, oh, the news today. And it would just be amazing. It was
wild enough.
I'm not doing it justice, clearly.
Well, I don't know if you ever knew this. One person did all of those sounds.
Yeah.
It was like...
they got the guy from Police Academy.
Yeah. He did the whole thing. I heard it was one take, too, which is...
That's incredible.
Just incredible.
I loved Radio Controls with a Z.
With a Z.
Yeah.
Hey, again, you were doing this while skateboarding a half pipe.
We forgot to mention that part.
Of course. The California games of radio control dial, of ham operating.
Indeed. That's where the whole go ham thing started, was this game. Went ham.
Yes, indeed.
Hey, if you'd like to become a video game like James Wynn and Radio Controls have, consider supporting us at the Hype Train level at patreon.com/DLCpod. All right. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.